The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think that we need to rethink it and criminalize
to the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Brought to you by the National Cannabis Coalition.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Oh, yeah. Welcome, everybody. It's time for the show. It's Friday, July 20th, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. And I'm telling you, folks, 420 could not come soon enough today. We definitely need a smoke break, I'm telling you, because we are working with a skeleton crew today. Ganja John is off. I forgot why, but he's...
He's actually headed out camping with Ganja Wife for an extended birthday vacation.
That's right, the camping vacation. And Cannabis Carrie is making her way back to the virtual studio in Grastoria. So joining us over here in the engineer seat doing everything I'm not doing is Wiz Calico. Hi, Calico.
Aloha. Glad to be here. Thank you. You're too kind.
So we still got a great show for you today, because our very special guest on today's show is Stephen D'Angelo, the CEO of Harborside Health Center. They're going to be putting forth a massive demonstration in Oakland on Monday to protest President Obama's fundraiser. They're going to ask him to respect state marijuana laws. We're going to do the same thing on Tuesday right here from Portland, and you can catch the live coverage right here of both days on NCR420.com. So tell your friends, tweet it out, get it on Facebook, let them know they can get live coverage of both protests Monday and Tuesday. Check us out starting around 10, 11 in the morning, and we'll bring you that live coverage at NCR420.com. Steve D'Angelo, our guest at half past from Harborside. Also on today's show, it's Daily Toker Tunes time, Rockin' Friday, and you know what that means. That means the man made of marijuana and metal calls us up. That's Herb Thrasher, and Herb Thrasher is going to be bringing some great music today. Actually, video today. We get some rock video from American Bastard and their tune 8,000 days. So stick around for that. And speaking of Herb Thrasher, he's on later tonight, 8 o'clock Pacific time, on the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. 2 hours of hard-hitting metal, rock, alt-country, hellbilly. And tonight we're going to be doing a tribute to Deep Purple, and most specifically John Lord, their keyboardist, who passed away at the age of 71 this week. So tribute to Deep Purple and more coming up on Herb Thrasher Flower Hour later tonight. Also on the show, we have scheduled Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com at 45 past to give us the celebrity entertainment news. We'll find out what's the news in the latest busts in sports and in celebrities and so forth. A lot of celebrities have been coming out for marijuana legalization lately, and he's going to give us all the details on that. Then in hour two, we're going to take it into Toker Talk Radio. We'll take your calls at 971-533-7111. I know Calico heard an ad today we're going to have to discuss. Came up on our Oregon airwaves. We'll cover that and plenty more on today's show. So thanks for joining us here at National Cannabis Radio. And don't forget, we still need your support. If you can help us out financially, you can text Russ to 420-420, and it'll give you the opportunity. It's not required, but the opportunity to make a donation to the National Cannabis Coalition. And all of that will help us get our message across. And again, Stephen D'Angelo coming up at half past, 45 past, we got Steve Bloom. It is a full show today. Thanks for joining us here on National Cannabis Radio. When we come back, we've got your Daily Cannabis Chronicle, the latest headlines in marijuana reform, coming up right after the break. Stick around, it's the Russ Belville Show.
Hey.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word RUSS to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's RUSS to 420-420. You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show. Wiz Khalifa's wallet and cell phone are missing. Again. And Taco Bell's already been searched. We got to look somewhere. Help us legalize it. Text NCC to 420-420 and send $10 to the National Cannabis Coalition. Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis. The topic of marijuana is heating up the news, and the Russ Belville Show catches you up with today's latest headlines. Now, here's our senior news editor, Cannabis Carey, with the Daily Cannabis Chronicle.
Cannabis Carey has the day off today. I'm Radical Russ with your Daily Cannabis Chronicle. This from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Medical marijuana grower and others sue to stop pot legalization initiative. The state's most famous purveyor of medical marijuana and others have sued to keep a marijuana legalization initiative off the November ballot, claiming initiative I-502 could be ruinous, end quote, to the state's budget. Opponents filed a lawsuit late last week in King County Superior Court, claiming the ballot should warn voters of the measure's costs. Evaluators at the State Office of Financial Management have not yet said whether they believe the measure, which would regulate marijuana production, distribution, and possession, will have a positive or negative financial impact if passed by voters. Contacted Thursday, Civil Liberties attorney and I-502 supporter Allison Holcomb noted state law gives the Office of Financial Management until August 10th to issue its opinion. She said she remains, quote, confident the agency will meet its deadline, end quote. Standing behind the lawsuit is Steve Sarich, a medical marijuana advocate who gained notoriety in 2010 when he shot a teenage burglar attempting to break into his Kirkland home and pot grow. The lawsuit is the latest move by pot-supporting opponents of the pro-legalization initiative. Backed by numerous elected officials and several former law enforcement officials, I-502 has drawn criticism from anti-initiative activists who claim it would penalize unimpaired drivers who previously smoked marijuana. It is also apparently the regulatory framework put forward by I-502 that would undercut the need for medical marijuana providers, particularly those offering prescriptions to patients with dubious ailments. If the initiative passes in November, adults 21 years old would no longer have to obtain a medical marijuana license to avoid prosecution for drug possession. Well, I've had my go-rounds with Steve Sarich a few times. He's the one who's been writing in the dispensary mags that are up there in Seattle, been writing that, if I-502 passes, no patient would ever be able to drive, ever. Nobody would ever be able to drive, and everybody that sells pot would be forced to sell it at $600 an ounce. So consider the source. Understand that a lot of these people that have this problem always seem to be connected to the medical marijuana industry. Isn't that kind of interesting? This Dr. Gil Mobley, who's another one of these anti-I-502 guys. How many recommendations will you be writing, Dr. Gil, for people when they no longer have to get a permission slip to smoke an ounce? And medical marijuana dispensary people, you're not really going to like having to follow regulations and having to pay licenses licensing fees and taxes and having all these different security requirements that a regulated system might give you. No, no, it's much, much easier to grow all your medical marijuana, Steve, and sell it like you're selling it right now without a whole lot of competition, without a whole lot of legitimate business people who know how to run a tight ship competing with you and bringing those prices lower and cutting into your bottom line. We're not fooled here. You could give 2/10 of a tick's turd what the effect is here on the state budgets. This is a smokescreen. This is a delay tactic. This is just some way for them to try to get something off the ballot that would end 10,000 marijuana arrests in Washington state every year. They want to allow those 10,000 arrests to keep going. They want you to vote on the same side as the drug czar in whether or not there should be legalization in Washington state. And it's even more disgusting when people like him have been behind previous efforts to get legalization on the ballot and have failed every time. But once somebody finally does make the ballot, finally does do the polling and writes an initiative in such a way that it can finally make the ballot, that it can bring in high-profile supporters from law enforcement and the federal government, former federal officials, FBI officials, who are saying this is the right way to go, finally we get something that has a snowball's chance in hell of passing. For the first time in 42 years, Washington State has had the chance to vote on marijuana legalization, and you, sir, want to take that away from the voters. You don't think the voters are capable of making that decision. You want to play some sort of little trick here within the regulations, pull some sort of technicality to get something kicked off of the ballot. Shame on you, Steve Sarich. Shame on you for fighting against legalization. And back to the state of Kentucky, we had reported on activists who were working on the Gatewood-Galbraith medical marijuana bill. It appears that that bill is moving forward. We have this report from Examiner.com. Barry Adams writes, Kentucky legislature sees medical marijuana bill on deck for 2013. Even as 17 other states in the District of Columbia further work into their own medical marijuana legislation, other states are just beginning to hop aboard the medical marijuana train. In Kentucky, known for both the historical cultivation of large quantities of cannabis and also large-scale crop destruction by the state authorities, Senator Perry Clark has sponsored proposed medical marijuana legislation for the state's next legislative session in 2013. The very same bill was defeated in 2012, but Clark intends to refile it, despite an apparent lack of support from his peers and local law enforcement. In an interview conducted by the Lexington Herald Reader, Kentucky State Police Captain David Jude stressed the complications present for police when distinguishing between legal and illegal marijuana, and noted until such a medical marijuana bill is made law, Kentucky authorities will continue to investigate marijuana-related crimes. Opponents of the legislation have noted the lack of discretion used in other states with marijuana laws and defame the abuse of the medical marijuana industry, while supporters note the active regulatory systems in place over Colorado's industry, quickly becoming a focal point and legislative model to marijuana-friendly states in the U.S. Well, as usual, it's always interesting to me to get law enforcement's perspectives on these things, you know, with all the years that they spent in medical school. I always love their opinions on medical marijuana and how people should treat their diseases, you know, because obviously, you know, if you're going to get an expert opinion on this, why bother with a doctor? You know, let's talk to cops about this. But really, this is the thing that bothers me about it. They said it's complications, right? It's tough. It makes their job hard when police have to distinguish between legal marijuana and illegal marijuana. Well, some of these people that have marijuana, we're going to have to figure out whether or not we can put them in a cage. Gosh, that makes our job so hard. It's just so much easier when we find pot and we can just take anybody we find with pot and throw them in a cage. It's so much easier. Why would you guys want to make our job so hard trying to figure out who's sick enough to avoid arrest for marijuana, right? Of course, the logical thing here would be to not arrest anyone for marijuana, then you don't have to bother to figure out who's sick enough and who's healthy enough. But when you really think about their motivation here, when you take their words at face value, you really learn how dispassionate these people are, what a huge lack of empathy they have. Because really what it amounts to is they're saying that we can't legalize medical marijuana. We can't let a cancer patient or an AIDS patient or an MS patient smoke a joint because that'll make it harder for us to figure out how to bust the teenager who's smoking a joint. So Since it's going to be hard for us to figure out if the teenager's smoking the joint legally, well, then we're just going to have to let the cancer, AIDS, and MS patients suffer. Because, you know, it's much more important that we stop a teenage kid from smoking a joint than to provide some sort of medicine that might help people with pain and spasticity and nausea and cramps and the terrible things that happen with their diseases. Much better they suffer than one kid, you know, not be able to get busted for smoking a joint. Except for the fact that that's the situation we have right now with illegal marijuana, and it's still not stopping any kids from smoking a joint. Another interesting study, and we'll have to bring this up on next Wednesday's talk with Dr. Mitch in our cannabis Q&A segment, but this is coming from medical or news-medical.net, the news medical, and interesting story from Mark Cowan here reads, cannabis use linked to cognitive performance in bipolar patients. Results from a U.S. study suggest that bipolar 1 disorder patients who have a history of cannabis use have better neurocognitive function than those who have not used cannabis. The team found that these bipolar patients with cannabis use disorder performed better on measures of attention, processing speed, and working memory than other bipolar patients, despite being more likely to have a history of psychosis, indicating a more severe disease course. Quote, these data could be interpreted to suggest that cannabis use may have a beneficial effect on cognitive functioning in patients with severe psychiatric disorders, end quote, commented Raphael Braga from the Zucker Hillside Hospital, Glen Oaks, New York, as well as his team. He continued, quote, however, it is also possible that these findings may be due to the requirement for a certain level of cognitive function and related social skills in the acquisition of illicit drugs. The results come from a study of 200 bipolar patients, 50 of whom had cannabis use disorder. All of the participants underwent clinical assessments and completed a neurocognitive test battery. There were no significant differences between patients with and without cannabis use disorder regarding age, racial background, or highest educational level achieved, the researchers note in Psychiatry Research. However, patients with cannabis use disorder were more likely to have a history of psychosis than those without, 82% versus 67%. Nevertheless, patients with cannabis use disorder had significantly better attention, processing speed, set shifting, and working memory than those without, as indicated by scores on several tests. Braga and team conclude, quote, these analyses indicate an interesting pattern suggesting superior neurocognitive performance among bipolar patients with comorbid CUD, cannabis use disorder, when compared to bipolar patients without a history of cannabis use. Moreover, this cognitive advantage is noted in spite of evidence of a more severe clinical course. They add, we hope that the results from our study will help guide and encourage future large studies and help further elucidate the multifaceted associations and possible impact of cannabis use in bipolar disorder. Well, this is a fascinating news. Before I get to it, though, let's clean up this whole cannabis use disorder part, right? Isn't that fascinating? Cannabis use disorder. Like, the fact that you used cannabis in and of itself is a disorder. They're not talking about people with demonstrated cannabis dependence, right? Cannabis dependence, that's a DSM-4 thing, and it's also bullshit, but we can talk about that later. But they're not even talking about that. They're calling anyone who smokes pot as someone who has a cannabis use disorder. Okay, I guess anyone who drinks has an alcohol use disorder as well. Anybody who smokes cigarettes has a tobacco use disorder. All right, sure. But this is not very surprising in that we have found so many other anecdotal results of people who are showing the neurocognitive benefits of cannabis use, its neuroprotective abilities, especially the strains of cannabis higher in CBD. We are finding this with patients that have Alzheimer's dementia, Alzheimer's rage. They're finding a lot of promising results here. People anecdotally have reported great results of cannabis use for anxiety and depression and other mental illnesses, post-traumatic stress injuries, and so forth. So this is really no surprise, and I'm really glad that we're starting to see some of the science come in on this. Now, it is important, you know, we always say a correlation is not always causation, and they do make the point that it just could be that the patients, the bipolar patients that smoke pot, have to have better cognitive skills to be able to negotiate the illicit drug market. They're saying, like, the really badly bipolar ones wouldn't be able to find weed or get it. Yeah, right. Pretty much anybody who wants to get weed can get it, bipolar or not.
It's 420 back in Idaho, where Russ and Carrie were born. So we have to go connect with our roots. You know what I mean? Please support these sponsors who support the Russ Belville Show.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man?
Mr. Brand, when we come back, we'll have Herb Thrasher on the phone for Rockin' Friday. Be right back.
If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Army pirates here.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Rockin' Friday, featuring rock, metal, and the hard edge of alternative country. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, it's time to rock, and we can't rock unless we get the man who is made of metal and marijuana on the line. Herb Thrasher, are you there?
Yes, sir, man. Doing great, man. How's everyone doing in the chat room there?
Chatters are loving it. They're ready to rock. It's been a long week, and we know that getting the Rockin' Friday on is the way to end it.
That's right, dude. It has been a long week, and it is time to get some rocking on. You know, we'd like to rock, and we rock on Friday nights. Got great those of you planning on joining us tonight at 8 o'clock on National Cameras Radio, Herb Thrasher Flower Hour.
Rock.
And today on Rockin' Friday, we're going to kind of put the two together, and there's a festival going on here in Portland in September. It's always the weekend after Labor Day, and this year I think it falls on the 8th and 9th maybe, or 9th and 10th. Anyways, it's the Saturday and Sunday, and it's called Hempstock, and just last night the core group got together and figured out the bands and the time slots and all that good stuff, and figured we would go over that tonight and announce a lot of those bands and play some songs. And that leads us to this one right here. We got a band that was announced last night that's going to play, and so we thought we would debut them on your show, the Russ Belville Show, man.
All right, so this is festival music coming up, huh?
This is it, dude. This is breaking kind of news. If you guys are into the Festival Northwest scene and the Hempstock and the Seattle Hemp Fest and keeping up with all that stuff, it was just announced. And we got a local band here, and they're called American Bastard.
God.
And these guys came out in 2008, been playing for, good 3-4 years now, and they've worked their way up to be able to open up for Saliva and Candlebox and a few other cool bands like that around here. And Kyle Knees, Bob Merritt, Dane Haas, and Nate Potter got together, and they're just kind of like a rock. They really are more of a rock and roll, hard rock kind of band with a little bit of dirty edge to them, kind of. Maybe the Motley Crue's and the Rats, and that's right. So there you go. Turn it up. Check them out on YouTube. Check them out on Facebook, and they even have a MySpace page. So check them out, guys. You can download their album free if you go like their page, their Facebook page. And we'll see you guys tonight. All Rock right, on.
See you tonight on Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. This is American Bastard, 8,000 Days.
Dear Dad, how should I say this? You know how you enjoy a drink after work? Well, in many ways, I'm just like you. I have a good job, I work hard. But when I get home, I prefer to relax with marijuana instead of alcohol. They're a little similar, but marijuana is actually less damaging to my health. And frankly, I don't feel like crap the next day. I hope this makes sense. But if not, let's talk.
TalkItUpColorado.org. Start your conversation about marijuana.
I like it like that.
Well, I don't know what you can do, but what we can
keep on the line. Yeah.
That's right, baby. We're keeping the funk alive right here at Big Daddy Fink's Funky Roller Rink, National Cannabis Radio's home of soul, funk, and disco. So join me, Big Daddy, every Tuesday night at 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, at the Funky Roller Rink, where every night is Saturday night.
U.S. Attorney Melinda Haig wants to close the nation's model dispensary, Harborside Health Center, simply because we've done too good a job. If she succeeds, every medical cannabis provider in the state is going to be under imminent threat, and federal prosecutors across the country will become emboldened. Nobody in the medical cannabis world will be safe. We cannot allow that to happen. Join me and thousands of others in Washington, Oregon, Colorado, and California as we stand together to stop these attacks. Come to Oakland on July 23rd to let President Obama know it's time to keep his promise and respect state medical cannabis laws. Let's seize this moment, turn it into a tipping point, and claim the victory that we've been working for all these years.
Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belleville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 32 past the hour. We're excited to have our next guest on the show. Coming back to the Russ Belleville Show, we've got Stephen D'Angelo, the CEO of Harborside Health Center in Oakland, California. Stevie, welcome back to the show.
Great to be here, Russ. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, folks watching the video cam just saw your plea through the wonderful video that you've put out. We're posting that up at our blog at RadicalRuss.com. We'll also have it on National Cannabis Coalition pages here as soon as the show's done. But let's remind folks about what the situation is here. We've been reporting on the U.S. Attorney Melinda Haig and her ability to detect crime before it happens. I was wondering if we could get your take on her most recent civil asset forfeiture proceeding nailed to your door.
Well, this is just the latest in a long line of attacks that the U.S. attorneys began to launch last October, saying they were going to concentrate on criminals and profiteers. But in fact, they've gone after totally legitimate operators. So the civil forfeiture with which we were served last week is an attempt on the part of the U.S. attorney to seize the property that we are operating in.
Yeah, and this is, of course, civil asset forfeiture is an abomination in and of itself, in that it says that somehow your property committed a crime, even though you yourself aren't charged with any crime. Is that not correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. The complaint was addressed to the real property located at 1840 Embarcadero and improvements therein. So you're exactly right. And there has been, in fact, in the last 10 years, a lot of favorable rulings from our point of view, because there's been a libertarian pushback, a property rights pushback on civil forfeiture law. So we are actually looking forward to joining this case as interested parties. And we believe that we have a path to victory if we are allowed to have our day in court.
In her complaint, she says that while Harborside is just so large that there have to be violations of medical marijuana law going on. Explain to our listeners who probably have already figured out for themselves why that's exactly the opposite of what is true.
Well, Harborside was established as a model dispensary to show how cannabis could be distributed in a legally compliant way that brought benefits to communities and not harms. And we've placed an extraordinary amount of effort into creating something that's not only compliant with California laws, but goes many steps beyond that to really deliver the gold standard of care to our patients. The reason that we have the largest number of patients is because we've provided the highest level of care.
Right. And of course, one of the other excuses that have been floated by the U.S. attorneys is, we're not going after, anybody who's legitimately providing medicine to sick people. Heaven forfend. No, what we're doing is we're going after the big time people that are getting it to people without real medical need. And, the thing that always bothers me about that, Stevie, is I always wonder what someone with epilepsy looks like, what someone with bipolar or anxiety looks like, because you can't always tell someone's sick.
Well, exactly. And, in California, we have a medical board whose job is to look into cases where recommendations or prescriptions are written inappropriately. And, people have an issue with the recommendations of cannabis. They should take it up with the medical board of California. I don't have the medical training to look at somebody and determine whether or not their diagnosis or their recommendation is accurate. I'm not a doctor, and neither is my staff.
Well, right, and it's just like we don't expect pharmacists to make diagnoses either. We expect them to trust the doctor's prescription that comes in, and hell, we'd do it by prescription if the federal government would let us, but we don't have that option. Steve, let's talk about the protest coming up here on Monday. Let's remind everybody what they need to do if they want to be a part of this.
Well, it's very simple. Just come to Frank Ogawa Plaza, that's also known as City Hall Plaza, in downtown Oakland at 11:30 or 12 noon. We will be there for a few different hours, for 3 or 4 hours there. We're going to have an opportunity for the patients, who are really the lost voices in this debate, to be heard. And so we are really going to put the patients front and center and have a patient's tribunal where they can talk about how they've been helped by cannabis and how they will be harmed, how they have been harmed by the actions of the U.S. attorney. And we'll stay there for most of the day.
Yeah. This we're going to give lie to their excuses as well, because, I mean, they keep coming out with excuse after excuse. It used to be, well, Berkeley Patients Group is within 1,000 feet of a school. Well, Harborside's not. You know, oh, well, there could be violations of law. Well, actually, we have cameras and we follow all the regulations. I mean, every excuse of theirs has been proven false. This is clearly political. They've gone after Oaksterdam, Berkeley Patients Group, and Harborside Health Center. If you were going to name the top three places that were probably most in compliance with law, it's those three. So how much of this do you think is generated from the U.S. Attorney's Office independently, or do you feel like this is coming from higher levels at the Department of Justice?
Well, you know, it would seem that there's a real disconnect between publicly announced administration policy and what's happening here with U.S. Attorney Haig. Just a few weeks ago, U.S. Attorney Holder testified under oath in front of the U.S. Congress that the Department of Justice was only going to be targeting individuals and organizations that were out of compliance with state law. Everybody knows that Harborside is in compliance with state law. Even Ms. Haig made no allegations that we were out of compliance with state law whatsoever. She articulated this vague principle that if a dispensary is larger, then therefore it's more likely that medicine gets into the hands of people who don't need it. But that's completely untrue in the case of Harborside, which has a pristine record of legal compliance.
And it also begs the question, since when do federal authorities have the standing to be evaluating whether someone's breaking a state law?
Well, they profoundly don't, because you know, they don't even believe that there is a medical use for cannabis in the
right.
first place. And you know, we're licensed by the city of Oakland. We pay $2.5 million a year, more or less, to the state of California in taxes. The state has no problem accepting those taxes. We work closely with state officials and city officials, and there's plenty of opportunity. If the state of California thought we were out of compliance with state law, they have plenty of opportunity to say so and take action against us, and that hasn't happened.
Do you think the these actions by the Obama administration's Department of Justice are going to have any effect on Mr. Obama's chances? I mean, it seems like California is kind of a lock no matter what happens. What do you hope the result of this protest is?
Well, President Obama is coming to California not so much looking for more votes, because, as you said, it's a safe state for him, but he is looking for money. And I can tell you that I've spoken to many donors who are not going to give any money to the president's campaign unless we see some real change on his part between now and the election. There are dozens, if not hundreds, of people I've spoken to who feel that way. And I think that the president is going to see a diminished take below what he expected coming out of the Fox Theater. And I know that many people who even are still going to contribute to the president and go inside the theater are going to be carrying messages to him. So it already is impacting his electoral chances. There's a particular danger in Colorado, which is a libertarian state, and the libertarian candidate for president, Gary Johnson, is a very outspoken advocate for medical cannabis and for states' rights. And I think that there's a very, very good chance that if the president doesn't send us some real clear signals here between now and November, that he will lose hundreds of thousands of cannabis votes in Colorado to Gary Johnson, and thereby could lose the state to Romney.
Yeah, and we're speaking with Stephen D'Angelo. He's the CEO of Harborside Health Center and a lifetime advocate for the legalization of marijuana. And, of course, you saw him in the Discovery Channel show Weed Wars as well. You know, Stephen, with this crackdown coming from the feds, and it seems as if, you know, Obama wants to keep his hands clear of this. Now, obviously, for I can see the political reasons why he'd want to, you know. But we saw in Mr. Obama what he called an evolution on his stance on same-sex marriage, where he was, you know, initially very, very against it, even, you know, not much supportive of the civil unions idea. But over time, and maybe with some help from Joe Biden's gaffe, he says he's evolved on it and supports that. Do you hold out hope that Mr. Obama, should he win a second term, may evolve his position on medical cannabis, especially considering there might be one, two, or three states that legalize this election?
Well, you know, you can always hope, but I found that people's future actions are best determined by their past actions. And unfortunately, the president right now has a record of not keeping his promise to the medical cannabis community. So I'll tell you, on my part and the part of most people I know, we don't intend to give him a second chance unless we see a change soon.
Okay. And furthermore, on these, you know, I mentioned the busts that had happened with Oaksterdam and Berkeley Patients Group, Harborside. A lot of people think then that, oh, my God, that's it. That's the end of them. I know Oaksterdam's still up and running and holding classes. Harborside's still open? No plans to close?
Harborside is still open. No plans to close. You know, beyond that, we're never going to abandon our patients. We are a collective of over 100,000 people. We are not held together by a physical location. We are held together by the commitment we've made to serve each other, to take care of each other, and by the love that holds us together. And that's not something that the federal government or anybody else is ever going to be strong enough to break. And we will continue taking care of our patients. It really doesn't matter whether Harborside is in this physical location or another, whether I am free and on the streets or whether I'm locked up in federal prison. We'll make sure, especially, that our most vulnerable patients continue to get the medicine that they need. We'll never stop doing that.
Well, you heard it here, President Obama. You got two choices. Harborside can run and serve 108,000 patients in a well-lit building where you can see where things are going on. We can keep control of it, and there's security and cameras and taxes being paid to the city and the state. Or we can have Harborside serving 108,000 patients on the sly, on the down low, through distributions and collectives and work behind the scenes. But it's not going away. And that's what I think that they just don't understand, is that, what do they think, these 108,000 people are suddenly going to get well and not need cannabis?
Yeah, we are never going away. Anybody who's seen the video appeal of Jason David, the father of a five-year-old that we've been treating with CBD-rich cannabis for his very, very severe epilepsy, cannot fail to be moved to tears when they see how much this medicine has helped this child and how important it is that he have some place like Harborside where the medicine is tested and where he can get specialized formulations that are CBD-rich. Mm-hmm. It's really our most vulnerable patients, like Jaden David, who are going to be hurt the most if we're not around.
Yeah, and we played that video, I believe it was on Monday's show when this announcement first came down, so our audience saw that as well, and a lot of them moved to tears as well. There's no doubt that what these actions that are being undertaken by the federal government hurt people. They hurt people. They're going out to hurt people, and we cannot stand for that. We're going to be protesting this. Stephen D'Angelo is going to be running this protest, and with all the great activists here in the Bay Area. This is this Monday, July 23rd. And again, what time do they need to show up there?
High noon, City Hall Plaza.
And we will also be bringing live coverage of that protest. We've got one of our own, Sam Chapman's going to be down there helping us bring a stream of the proceedings. So, you know, obviously we have listeners all over the world. And if you can't make it to Oakland, log on to the stream, tell your friends, spread it around the social networks. Let's make it viral. Let's let the whole world see that medical cannabis patients and the people of California aren't going to stand up for this federal trampling on our rights. The protest continues on Tuesday up here in Portland. Oregon. National Cannabis Radio will be there, again, bringing live coverage of the protest from Portland, Oregon. We will just continue that media wave. We want to hammer him every day on this, and the pundits are going to know, the political talk shows are going to know, that you cannot make it through the West Coast or Colorado or any of the medical states without positively addressing this issue. Stephen D'Angelo, I'll give you the last word. Anything else you'd like to tell our audience before we call it a day?
Sure. Don't lose heart. Don't lose hope. This is the watershed moment that we've been waiting for. This is our opportunity to make tomorrow our tipping point and to make the next day the day of our victory. So they really have taken the bait here. They've done something which is completely indefensible. People all over the country are up in arms about it. And, you know, my message to all of our supporters is onward. I will see you at the barricades. And there's no doubt. That we're going to win this in the end.
All right. Thank you so much for everything you're doing, all the help you've brought to patients for all these years. And I'll probably see you up in Seattle for the Hemp Fest, Stevie.
All right. See you there, Ross. Take care. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. And again, all the work we do, Harborside Health Center, Stephen D'Angelo. When we come back, I believe it's going to be time for a radical rant. I don't have Steve Bloom on the line. I think we may have miscommunicated our times there. So I'll just give you a radical rant. We're going to take a look at a new commercial making the rounds here in Oregon, and I'm going to deflate some of the statistics in it. Listening to the Russ Belville Show, we're back right after this.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Our marijuana laws are terribly unfair, and they make criminals out of law-abiding citizens. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges, and we are unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They are average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. And it's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Sir, do you think there will or should come a time for us to discuss the possibility of legalization, regulation, and control of all drugs, thereby doing away with the violent criminal market as well as a major source of funding for international terrorism? Thank you so much for your time, Mr. President.
Well, I think this is a entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Name the time and place, Mr. President. Radical Russ has been prepping for this debate full-time since 2005. The Russ Belville Show.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant. Welcome back, folks. The subject for today's rant is something that I got from our producer, Wiz Calico, who earlier today had heard a commercial on our local progressive talk radio station, KPOJ AM 620, also my former home when I had the original Russ Belville Show. Calico, can you give us a kind of a summation of what you heard in this thing, some of the phrasing?
It just started out by saying, you may have heard that our prisons are filled with marijuana smokers. And basically just went on to say that, you know, you've heard wrong, and then just listed like 35, 40 seconds full of statistics that you just better believe as fact, because there are no marijuana smokers and nobody ever gets busted for pot in the state of Oregon.
Yeah, so I just wanted to address that, because now that Oregon's passed, or has placed, excuse me, I'm jumping ahead of myself, placed Measure 80 on the ballot, that's our OCTA, Oregon Cannabis Tax Act, that would legalize personal possession and cultivation of marijuana. This whole police, prison, rehab, industrial complex is ratcheting up the rhetoric to distort, confuse, and dissuade the public from doing what a majority of them support, legalizing marijuana. Especially out here in the West Coast, where some polls show 58 to 60% support for legalization of marijuana. Now, they played that ad, and this ad comes from a group apparently called the Truth in Sentencing Project. trying to downplay what are the life-altering consequences of a marijuana arrest, trying to suggest that our prisons are not filled with nonviolent drug offenders, right? They say, oh, you may have heard there's a lot of people in prison for marijuana. No, I didn't say that. Did you say that? You see that? I didn't say that, but maybe you heard that. Let me go to their press release on this, because after Coleco called me, I looked it up and we found the press release from this group. He says, quote, this is Stephen Dole, the executive director of this Truth and Sentencing Project, says, quote, there's a lot of misinformation out there about Oregon's sentencing laws and the criminal justice and prison systems, and the Truth and Sentencing Project's goal is to dispel those misconceptions. For instance, many people believe that up to 50% of the prison population is incarcerated for possessing drugs. Oh, really? Many people. I heard many people thought that. Many people. Many of them. That's a Fox News trick, people. Many people. It's a way of setting up a straw man argument, which is basically trying to put the words in the mouth of your opponent and then tearing apart those words. I don't recall anybody from our marijuana legalization side, anyone from OCTA, ever saying half the people in prison are there for drugs. Now, it has been said half of the people in federal prison are there for drug charges. And that's absolutely true. So here this Truth in Sentencing Project wants to take an anecdote about federal sentencing and think that we think it about Oregon state sentencing. All right, so we're a little slimy right there. Coleco's got the ad, too. We'll see if we can get that up in hour two and let you take a look at that or let you hear that as well. We'll play that in hour two for you. Or if you manage to get it and you can play it through the Skype machine, we could possibly do that as well. But the idea here is what they're trying to do is to try to make you think that the whole reason we need to legalize marijuana is because we're over-incarcerating small-time pot smokers. And then if you show that there's exceedingly few small-time pot smokers in prison, well, voila, no need to legalize marijuana. But see, that's the problem, is that we're not saying that. We're not saying that it's prisons are packed to capacity with pot smokers, and that's the problem. First off, the whole less than half a percent stat of people in Oregon prisons for marijuana. Oh, I'm sorry, I got to read that to you. I didn't read that quote. Here's another one of his quotes when he said, many people believe that 50% of the prison population is incarcerated for possessing drugs. And by the way, that even that's inaccurate. Let's just go to the ad here. You got the Skype machine turned on. We'll just play the ad. You can listen to it for yourself.
If you think Oregon prisons are full because we're sentencing pot smokers to prison, you're wrong. I'm Steve Dole of the Truth in Sentencing Project. Of Oregon's 14,000 prisoners, only one half of 1% are there for drug possession. And only one in four felons are sentenced to prison. One in four. So who's in Oregon prisons? Two-thirds are violent criminals. Murders, rapists, armed robbers, child molesters. The rest are incorrigible repeat property and drug criminals. If you've heard Oregon has high prison costs because we send a lot of people to prison, you've heard wrong again. Two-thirds of the states have higher incarceration rates than Oregon. Inmate costs are $82 a day in Oregon, $52 a day in Idaho. If Oregon brought its costs in line with Idaho, we'd save $153 million a year. We're the Truth in Sentencing Project, and that's the truth.
Uh-huh. All right. So, it's not that expensive to ruin people's lives and lock them up over pot. Okay. First off, let's get to his stat. Only half percent are there for the drug possession, right? Less than one half are there for drug possession. Well, right. The thing is, though, is that there are so many things that we would just think of as drug possession that get charged as something greater. For example, if I possess a substantial amount of drugs and they have evidence of me being on the phone with someone talking about those drugs, there's a conspiracy charge. Ah, conspiracy charge. That's not a possession charge I could be put in jail for, but it is a charge I could be put in jail for possessing pot. Let's talk also about the people who may be on probation for some other crime they may have committed. Maybe they, stole something. Maybe they wrote a bad check, whatever it might be. They're on probation and they fail the whiz quiz. Right? They are dirty on a P-test. Bam, they're back in prison. But they're not counted as being back in prison for smoking a joint. They're counted as being back in prison for their original crime of having stolen something or written a bad check, whatever it might have been. right? So here's a situation where smoking pot did get you thrown in prison, but you're not showing up in that less than 0.5% stat, right? He also, like I said, possession. They're not in there for possession of drugs, right? And, I mentioned the conspiracy thing. Also, let me get to this to you here. The other thing they try to do is to conflate the marijuana with all the other scary sounding drugs, right? In their press release, they say only 0.5% of Oregon's 14,000 inmates is serving time for drug possession, and those were convicted for possession of substantial quantities of illegal drugs such as cocaine, ecstasy, heroin, marijuana, and methamphetamine. Yeah, sure. But most of them there are there for pot. Most drug arrests are for pot. Most drug convictions are for pot, right? So there's a whole lot of them there for pot. They like to throw the ecstasy, cocaine, heroin, and meth in there to make it sound a little bit more scary. Also, let's consider what substantial quantities are. Well, they're in jail for substantial quantities. They must have been drug kingpins. Well, they deserve to be in jail. But in Oregon, a substantial quantity that can get you felony time is over an ounce. That's right, 29 grams in the state of Oregon is a substantial quantity for which you can get prison time. And a single plant or seed is a felony for which you can get substantial prison time. And the main problem with this, too, is, again, they try to direct this into weird thinking that the problem is there's too many people in prison. No, that's not the problem. The problem is not incarceration. The problem is punishment for smoking pot in the first place. When you're caught and everything, oh, Oregon, it's decrim. Yeah, but when you're caught with just a joint in the state of Oregon, it's a ticket and a fine, but it's also a mandatory 6 month driver's license suspension, even if you weren't driving, even if you weren't near your car when you were caught with the joint. And for many people, losing their driver's license can mean the loss of their job. So, okay, yeah, they're not in prison, but their lives are substantially altered because of getting caught with that joint. Oh, and don't forget, if you were caught with that joint within 1,000 feet of a school, or in other words, anywhere in a city, pretty much, it's a misdemeanor with 30 days in jail. And that misdemeanor, that's now in the public record. And now you're branded a drug criminal for the rest of your life in the age of Google. And that makes it a whole lot harder for you to get a job when you lose your current one because you've been in jail for a month. And then some of those people, when they get out of jail, unable to find work because they have to check that little box that says they're a drug criminal, well, they'll turn to crime. And then that might get them locked up in prison for something other than pot. So once again, the whole less than 0.5% stat works out great because we ignore the fact that what led the criminal to being in jail for the robbery in the first place was the joint he got caught smoking that lost him his job, that made him unemployable, and then had forced him to turn to a life of crime to feed his family and keep a roof over his head. So yeah, it's really easy to pick and choose through these little stats and say, oh, it's only less than 0.5%. But hey, for that less than 0.5%, it really sucks for them too. And sure, a lot of these people that get busted, they might get deferred prosecution, or they might get a mandatory rehab, or they'll get some sort of lengthy probation that means they're technically not in prison. But that's still costing us money. We still have to pay for those drug tests. We still have to pay for those probation officers and all that supervision. But they don't fall into that 0.5% stat. And don't forget, those people in the rehabs, those people in those probations, they fail one of those P-tests. And remember, you can fail a P-test as a pot smoker even if you haven't been smoking pot. Paul Armentano, when I was working for Normal, told me of cases where people had abstained for 9-10 days and still and had negative tests during those 9 days, and then on the 10th day turned up positive. So even through no fault of your own, just the fact that THC eliminates from your body in an inconsistent manner can get you busted and put back in prison when you don't deserve it.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
We're going to talk more about that in hour two. We'll also take your calls here at 971-533-7111. For Wiz Calico, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here in the Skeleton Crew. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers. Have a great weekend.